Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by WitchSchool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
And good evening, everyone. And if you're listening to this podcast when it's fresh and new, know that Witch School is going to be getting their lockout in just a few short days. And after it's come back, it's going to be a magnificent, brand new, oh my gosh, all too much money spent site. And so, yeah, get excited. I know October, people have asked us, why did we choose October? Well, it's the way it just came up in the schedule. Remember, a lot of people don't care about Halloween. It's tragic, it's true, but they don't. For them, October is just October. But talking about that sort of thing, as you know, I'm not in Chicago for this month. I'm in Salem, working hard, working on the Ed the Pagan show, working on a lot of different ideas, and I'm having a good time. But I got a very fortunate thing is that I want to make sure that we are still covering our favorite city in the world, Chicago. But we have so many great and powerful people, and now I got a chance to with somebody whom I've never interviewed before, and I'm excited about it. I'm really excited about it because this kind of this sounds like a lot of fun. So with no further ado, I want to go ahead and bring on the Glam Witch himself, Michael. I hope you got this right. Herkes. Come on, push button. There we go.
Hello.
There you are. Yes, these digital buttons take a little longer than real ones. I miss my old buttons, I tell you.
No problem.
So, yes, well, welcome aboard. I'm grateful to have you. And as you know, you are now, is this not your first book, or is it your first book, The Glam Witch?
This is my first book, very, very first book.
Okay.
And it's really, really cool is it's not only my first book, but it's my publisher's first book as a publisher as well. So we're breaking all the records with firsts.
And who is your publisher? Go ahead, why don't you introduce, because that's very interesting.
Yeah, so my publisher is through Which Way Magazine, which is now has a new imprint, which is Which Way Publishing. So, so for anybody that's not familiar with Which Way Magazine, it's a really great online witch and pagan periodical that comes out once a month that talks about different lifestyle aspects of the craft. I want to say that it's been going on for 3.5, 4 years now, 4 actually, I think. But I've been a contributing writer for the magazine since November 2017. And it was through writing with them that we got to talking and this book came into existence. So I'm really excited. It's gotten a lot of really good feedback so far, and it's really close to my heart and something I'm very, very passionate about. So I'm happy that a lot of people are becoming really inspired by it.
Well, let's go ahead and back this up a little bit. The Glam Witch is a great name.
Yes.
It's very much answered today. But how did you become the Glam Witch? Now, give us kind of a little bit of a story.
Yeah, let me give you the bridge version of it. Well, I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago, in Park Forest, Illinois, if you're familiar with it. And it was there that I grew up, and I was this odd little child who really, really loved the moon and snakes and Barbie dolls and anything witch-related. We had it all kind of wrapped up in there, and as we go on with the story, like, that'll make a lot more sense. But I really got hooked into witchcraft through the glamorization of it in Hollywood that took place in the 90s. And as shows started talking about witchcraft and movies, I just kind of really saturated myself in the archetype of the witch. I loved the idea of witches. I thought they were fabulous, powerful, and everything that I felt like I wasn't growing up. So they were really, really cool, like personas to channel and bring forth. But I even, like right before, I even would say that I got dug deep into what modern witchcraft is today. I ended up stumbling across a graphic novel of Buffy the Vampire Slayer at my local bookstore. And in it, I flipped over the pages, and there's this beautiful, like, luxurious, very elegant and fascinating character who was Lilith and was considered Adam's first wife and was the mother of all vampires, and she was there to destroy the world. But I was, like, super, super obsessed with her. And eventually, once I started to dig a little bit into witchcraft, Wicca, I started to see her name more. And I really, it wasn't until I picked up Fiona Horn's book, Witch and Magical Journey, that I really got saturated into all things witchcraft and did my self-dedication ritual and really pursued life as a witch. And this is me at about 11 years old at this point. and I would continue to explore Lilith and what Lilith had to offer. But of course, this was a couple years ago. So the internet wasn't like what it was. There wasn't much documented research on her, or I'm sorry, not necessarily research. There was a lot of like research, but it was just kind of hard for me as this young kid to get it. But there weren't many occult books that talked about her, or at least what I could find. And what I was finding always referenced her as a demon, really dark, satanic stuff, and that wasn't what I was interested in. So I put the idea of her way in the back burner and just kind of continued on trying to figure out what interests I had within the craft. But her name would constantly come up. I constantly find myself being saturated with something that was Lilith based. Turn on television, there'd be a character named Lilith or a version of it like Lily. And eventually I answered her call. And I really started to develop my own personal path as a witch and as a devotee to Lilith. And so that's what the book, The Glam Witch, is all about. It's about my personal path as a witch. It's essentially my book of shadows that I'm gifting to the world and giving Lilith as an offering to her and the world and the universe and trying to be of service within the community, because she's got such a presence. She continues to unfold in the media, and there's interest, but she still remains so misunderstood, and she's so such an enigma within the community. So I wanted to be able to present something that really gave rich information on her from a very empowering standpoint. And so when I say glam, you know, and I call myself the Glam Witch, it's kind of like a double-edged meaning for me. One, glam is, you know, glam rock, it's glamorous. We look at the word glamour, and it was the original version of, like, what a witch's spell was. When glam started, or glamour was used, the original name meant a witch's spell, an act of enchantment back in the 1700s, I believe. And it wasn't until 1939 that it got linked to Hollywood culture. So I always kind of laugh when I talk about, like, glamour magic, because I'm like, glamour is a witch's spell, so it's kind of a double negative. But I've always been drenched in aesthetic, love aesthetic, loved the little Barbie dolls growing up and all the little fun, glamorous things. I started working at glamour shop right out of high school. And so when I was trying to define what my path was and figuring out what my label would be within the community, I was going through some old notes that I had on Lilith that I had collected. And there was one from Doreen Valiente's An ABC of Witchcraft, where she references Lilith as the dark glamour of the moon. And it was then I was like, ding, 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 jackpot. Like, glamour has always been attached to me. And then when I was playing around with words, I realized that glam could also be an acronym for the Great Lilithian Arcane Mysteries, which is essentially what I now call my path and what the book is about. So that, in a nutshell, is how my origins on how I got here.
Wow, that is really well done. And I must say, I'm impressed.
Well, thank you.
And I'm impressed not just because I think that you put it well together, the story is that you brought forth a very interesting idea. And that's the idea that one of the original versions of the word magic or the first spell was a glamour. Because I've read that in older fairy tales have about the witch casted a glamour upon them.
Yep.
one of the early Sleeping Beauties was not, she didn't fall asleep under a spell, she fell asleep under a glamour, one of the earliest versions of Sleeping Beauty. And she wasn't covered in a forest, she was covered in a brer. And I always tell people that, because it was a big difference that she was covered in a brer. What's that? It's, it's a much more toxic version, not a little plaid. And the original early language of witches was a very beautiful, very rich thing when it was talked about in the literary world. They were always glamorized, weren't they, in some sort of literature?
Yeah, definitely. And it was always something that was supernatural and enchanting and just completely spellbinding, that would draw you in and lure you in. And essentially, I mean, yeah, we use it slightly in a different terminology today, but it still kind of does the same thing. I mean, it's this richness, this kind of surreal, extravagant type of a lifestyle, but at the same time, that can be very magical as well. So I really, really love that term. I know some people feel as though it's more like frivolous, or it maybe does us a disservice because we link it to like Hollywood culture and stuff, but I strongly disagree with that.
Well, I want to come back around to that because I think that's a very important point. I think that whole idea that you're embodying is a fantastic archetype. But I want to get back around to something that you said. I want to take you all the way back. And you said something about the glamour of the witches and that you were glamorized by Hollywood witches. What is the first witch you remember seeing on TV?
Oh my gosh.
Was it TV or a movie?
It was movies, and I don't remember which one I saw. Okay, so it was either, I want to say that it was either Snow White or it was The Wizard of Oz. But I have a big feeling it was The Wizard of Oz. And I just love the witch. I love the Wicked Witch. And now it's funny because, like, I dress more like Glinda, the Glitter Witch. But I loved her. All green-faced and everything. And then even in Snow White, I remember as a kid, they were playing it at the local theater. And I dragged my mom there to, like, let me see it with her multiple times. Like, I couldn't get enough of that movie. And the glamorous queen that was a witch, and she had her fun cauldron and her books and her, like, her little witch space in her basement, and then she would turn into the crone. I love that. And then, of course, Hocus Pocus was a big one for me. And and then from there, kind of, what else did I see? The Witches with Angelica Houston, of course. And then a bunch of, like, horror films that I convinced my mom or my dad when he was around to let me watch. Because it was literally, like, if a witch was in the movie, I wanted to see it. I needed to see it. I felt compelled to see it. And then that really elevated into strong feminine leads. So, like, Xena was big. So not necessarily witches, but goddesses. And that whole idea was played around in that show. And I loved that. And then, of course, that led to Buffy, which kind of then led me to Lilith. And then eventually in, like, season 2 or 3, and they started using Wicca and witchcraft interchangeably while Charmed came on. Then throwing practical magic to the mix. The craft, all of it. It was just this explosion of witches that were happening on the media screen. And, you know, eventually that was, you know, I saw a book. I like, the very first book that I ever picked up on it that I convinced my mom for was Teen Witch by Silver Ravenwolf. And, you know, I was having a hard time in school. I was coming of age. I was this young, queer, weird kid that was like, I was creepy because I liked snakes, but I was also weird because I liked girl things and pink. And so I was very outcast and singled out and trying to navigate junior high hell. And, you know, I just felt like I always felt like the witch was powerful. It was something that I just feel like I wasn't. And then I started to explore it more, and I realized it was a lot different than what Hollywood was talking about. But I was still very, very fascinated with it, especially with there being a goddess, because I always connected more to femininity rather than masculinity. And I also loved the idea that, you know, all acts of love and pleasure are rituals to the goddess. If there's any goddess that belongs to, Lilith is high on the list there. But I was just like, I could feel safe and I could feel comfortable coming out of two closets. So I came out of the gay closet and the witch closet, broom closet, at the same time. And I was very happy to have very supportive family. And, you know, I even just kind of joked recently about how, you know, for Christmas, like the first year I was into everything, I asked for a cauldron or something, or some witch tools. And they got them for me. It was really kind of cool. Like, I know other people's families maybe wouldn't have been so kind and open. So I'm very fortunate for that. And I just have continued on in a very solitary fashion. And it wasn't until 2017 that I really started to emerge myself back into the community with writing and going to different events and things. So. And I went on a long tangent there.
You did nothing of the sort. You provided valuable information. And actually, I think what's really important about your story is that it's a big, strong inspiration to other mm-hmm. young men and women who are facing similar problems right now in junior high. People are surprising. I'm on TikTok now, guys. And as everybody knows,
yeah.
I've always been the youngest part of my community through formation, mm-hmm. witch school, whatever. That. And actually, you are somebody I actually said is coming into our neighborhood and was taking leadership. Not you as an individual. Mm. What you just, your story is about. For me, it was Bewitched, the television series The Witch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and for us, and I always tell everybody, it's a story about a woman who was told in order to have a normal life, had to give up her power and live in black and white. And before the story was over, she was in full color and in control of her own self. And she was queen of witches. And I feel that for a lot of people, and if people don't understand, within there is the sacred journey that of every woman at the time had to make to be liberated.
Yeah.
And the series really goes through that whole process, unbeknownst to people. It was quite the mystery of how she buried her magic finally to the end. She was like, forget it. I'm queen of witches. I'm going to Salem. I'm doing all this stuff. And here's my daughter who's also doing it. And here's my family. If you don't like it, well, screw it. and for me, that was always a sort of modern tale, and it affected a lot of actors. I'm going to presume that you're millennial. I'm not sure actually how old you are, but we don't ask ages on here. So that's
I'm 30. I just celebrated my 30th year this year.
Oh, good.
So I think that technically does make me fall into the millennial.
I know exactly
era.
Where you're at. Yeah, absolutely. You are a millennial. You're solid, positive leadership. You're taking a 30, which is such a traditional age for leadership. People don't forget in the past. 30 was like the leadership age. And you lived to be 45 or 50.
Totally.
Makes sense. Yeah, but people forget that at 30 years old, you were expected to take leadership. If any leadership you're going to take, you're supposed to be like, okay, now I'm an adult. And so let me ask you about, I know one thing I noticed is that you talk about the black moon. And this is one of the more controversial subjects in our pagan community. So, in what concept?
Because the black moon. Okay, go on.
I only have a meme connected to your book. That was a promotion piece about the black moon. That's literally what I have. I have you with kind of a semi-outrageous meme out on the internet. Remember, this is the way we communicate today. I have really no idea what that actually means other than it penetrated my awareness through my social media that you have a concept called the black moon. Fair enough? There you go.
So the black moon... So what I talk about specifically in my book is the astrological black moon that's connected with Lilith. So in all of our natal charts, we have what's called Black Moon Lilith, as well as two other astrological pieces that Lilith has governance over. So I think it's really interesting, too, because this such a fearsome type entity has three astrological points that's in everyone's chart. So they're Asteroid Lilith, Dark Moon Lilith, and Black Moon Lilith. And she, in all of the capacities, represents our shadow self, that which is being repressed, our wounds, our rage, and how we kind of retaliate and reemerge from that situation in life. So the chapter that I write on shadow magic really explores digging deep into those three aspects and kind of a maiden mother crone relation to help bring your shadow into the light, not to heal it, not to do any of that kind of stuff, but just literally integrate it into your life. And that's the most healthiest thing that you can do. But there is also, I think if I'm correct with what you were talking about, the image that you were talking about was, we just had a black moon, I want to say like 2-3 weeks ago, where it's two new moons in 1 month. So, you know, when we have two full moons,
right.
It's a blue moon. And then the black moon is when there's two. So I think that might be what you're talking about. And that's just, for me, it doesn't necessarily have so much significance other than it's just a very potent new moon. So lots of new moon energy there, especially when you tie it into whatever the astrological correspondence of the moon is. So I believe it was the black moon in Libra, if I'm correct.
Okay.
New black moon in Libra.
It's very interesting. I want people to know that there was a big difference. I wanted you to be able to explain that very well. And it had very much with more of the astrological object actually to be known. So the black moon, the double new moon of a black moon, is a Chicago ritual theater practice from the 1992, 1993 called the Dark Theater Coven or the Black Moon Coven. And they decided.
Interesting. I had no idea about that.
Most people don't. It's actually been documented. And my group in Chicago from the Avalon nightclub. Because we were the nightclub kid. So when I was my early 30s, I was the nightclub. I was Ed the Urban Terrorist. So I had my glam period. I had a lion's mane and I was big. I wore a leather jacket and I went to rock clubs and I did tarot reading inside rock clubs for rock bands and rock people. Had a radio
show.
That's
super fun.
I was.
Cool.
And very much, and I remember, and the thing that I think applies to this, I remember, because we talked about, because I had a glamour at the time, and we literally called it a glamour as a spell, as a Pacific spell. And I had a lion's mane that I would wear. So I would go out, and I had a lion's mane, and I had it my career for years. When I lost my lion's mane to the Halloween accident, my career as a limelight accident, oh, yeah, I did, absolutely. I tried to make a mask. And the agitate got into my hair. My hair was down below my shoulder blade, around my shoulder. Typical 80s super hairstyle. And it got really deep into the front. And the ladies were like, oh, no, we can't get it out and everything else. I said, okay, you're just going to have to cut my hair. Took them 2.5 hours of picking. Finally, after all the blood, the bleeding, they can't get it out. They shaved my head. They cried. I just get life. That's life.
Yeah.
But I got my mask out of it, so it was well worth it to me. but it ended that glamour that I had. After that, I got to see much more. I went and actually became much more serious about my career. My career, the sort of magical career of the magical tarot card reader, the urban tarotist, kind of petered out right after I lost that hair that everybody worked on. I mean, and that was it. Everybody worked on it. It was a hairstylist. It was my wife at the time. Everybody in the club knew me. It was just a part of that entity. And then I would put the pin on. And then when I didn't need it, I would just flatten it down. It was just like a really long hairstyle. I would flatten it down and put it in a ponytail. But when I fluffed it up, I was the lion. I was very good at it. And it was very interesting. And I've always said that was the best glamour spell I ever cast in my life. It lasted about 3 years. And in that time, we did a thing called the Black Moon. We did all sorts of experimental theater. So you're from in Chicago. You're very much in that sort of Chicago. And Chicago pagans have had a tendency to towards the darker, but what other people would call darker or more root forces. And I find it very interesting that you, at the same thing, was very much into this, what people would call a darker or stronger force and more than most witches would deal with. Witches will deal with Hecate. Some will deal with Eris. But Lilith is a tough one to deal with. I know a few Lilithians And they're all very individualized,
yeah.
Very iconic. Hmm? Can you talk to that?
Yes, which is a great way to say it, yeah. And what I love about it, even when talking to other practitioners who work with Lilith, you know, we all, at the very end of the day, like there are commonalities to each one of our practices where you know that we are working with the same entity, but we all see her in such a different way, and she pulls something out of us all very, very different. So I was talking to one person, and they were like, it's so weird because, like, my work with Lilith, or, like, my energy that I have with her is like a bloody cave, but yours is like a rose garden under moonlight. And I was like, yeah, you're very, very right. And I think a big part of that is because Lilith does represent all of this independence, and she represents freedom, and she's very solitary. And that's definitely me and where I'm coming from. So, you know, and what I did with this book, what I'm hoping to do is, because we hear, again, so much more darker stuff about her. And some of it that's true. There's some of it that I question and argue, or not necessarily argue, but I kind of give alternatives to it. For example, like, you know, if we look at some of the biggest ones about her, or it's her being a child killer, right? Because that was what the myths were saying at the time. But there were so many other myths, and her history goes back so much further than that. And if we look at what she really represented at that time, prior to it, she represented freedom of sexuality. You know, she was a priestess to Inanna and Ishtar's sacred sex temples, sexuality from a pleasurable standpoint. So if the culture at that time was looking at, you know, you could only have sex in wedlock. You could only have sex to bring children into the world. If Lilith was the representation of having sex for pleasure, not for procreation, then yes, you can spin it to the fact that she's a child killer. So I don't look at her in that avenue of she was out there murdering children, but I look at it in a completely different way. But that's not to say that Lilith doesn't have harsher, more negative aspects to her. I mean, I do say in the book too, I mean, I feel like her energy is very much like my blood mother, you know, tough love, full of tough love. That's where we get that dark goddess energy, where it's, you're going to have to get through this. And not, like, there's not going to be any kind of babying. If you are calling upon me to fix a situation, then you better come to it with an action plan on what you're going to do. And also realize it's probably not going to go that way. So what are you going to do about it? What action are you going to take? It's not this lovey-dovey, okay, sure, I'll help you for the small price of an incense stick and an incantation. It's a lot deeper and darker.
All right, but let me stop you right there, because you are cool. Probably getting into the really highest level. So let me tell you the number. So let's go ahead with the number one myth or story of Lilith that everybody seems to know, and that is,
yes,
the first wife of Adam. And she mm-hmm. fucked on top, and she got rejected for that. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that
yeah. So the original story.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Our phones cut out. There was a weird disconnection. What was your last question?
Oh, I was just asking about this most common myth. Can you tell us? Give us some insight into it. Yeah. You know, the
oh
Adam
yes, absolutely.
Divorce.
So that story actually was written in a book that was called The Alphabet of Ben Sera, and it was from the 7th century CE. And it was really kind of a satirical story that was written, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that they started to realize and question that Genesis had a couple of errors in it, some plot holes about how God had made the earth and man and woman. And then in the next chapter, it talked about how, oh, well, you know, here's Eve and here's the right woman that will pay attention. So they kind of needed to pull the story together. And so that was the purpose of this, as well as trying to tell women, you know, this is what you need to do, or you don't ever want to be this Lilith type of an entity. You need to be subservient, or otherwise you're going to be banished. So the story that we all know and love about Lilith is that she was created just as Adam. They were both created from the earth at the same time, and they were quarrelsome because Adam thought that he was more potent and better than her because he came from clean sand and she came from the filthy mud of the earth. But I just think that's funny because sand is so infertile. And, you know, her coming from this mud, earth mother representation. So I kind of laugh at that. But anyways, you know, she was saying that she was not going to be submissive to him during sexuality. And he was like, no, you must lay below me. So she, and there's a couple different versions of it. Some say that she then, you know, flies to heaven and gets God's sacred name. Others say that she just right then and there sprouts wings and she flies. And she goes to a cave by the Red Sea and starts having great orgy sex with all of these demons and outcasts in that land. And then three angels came, tried to get her to come back. She said, absolutely not. They said that they'll kill 100 of her children a day. And she's like, great, I'll make more. And then from there on, there's so many other stories that kind of start coming up. And her myths take a completely different turn. Some say that she was the snake that comes back to Eden and tempted Eve. There's lots and lots of art that was done for that. There's even a relief at Notre Dame that has that imagery. And then she was considered, of course, the succubus. She was considered, you know, this child-killing monster. You know, she was... There's some people suggest that she was the reason for circumcision. Some say that she was the reason for the lullaby and that lullaby meant Lilith away at the time. So she essentially just became this big boogeyman, if you will. And it wasn't until the last 100 years or so that she started to kind of reemerge herself. But it's interesting, too, because we have two beautiful paintings that came of her in the 1870s. So we have Dante Gabriel Rossetti's version of her, where she's holding a hand mirror and she's all glamorous because there's so much folklore out there about how mirrors are the gateway to Lilith's cave, and you know she possesses people with vanity through the mirror. And then there's the other famous one of her naked in the Garden of Eden with a snake wrapped around her. So she started to really infect people's minds, the artist's minds. Creativity is a major thing for her. And then we had her being named on the astrological points. And then slowly but surely, she ended up becoming talked about within the witchcraft and the pagan movement that was going on. Then she was adopted by the feminists as you know, poster girl for feminism because of that story about Adam. And then from there, lots of television shows and books have been written about her. She's been a great villain for a lot of shows. But even prior to all of this, if we go back 5,000 years, Lilith's origins come from Sumerian time, where she was considered a wind spirit and a sacred prostitute to Inanna and Ishtar. And there was even a Gilgamesh poem that was chiseled into stone that they've been able to recover. And there's this really interesting story about Inanna having a sacred garden with a halupu tree, which is basically a willow. And there's snakes at the bottom and a bird at the top and Lilith's in the middle and Inanna cries and she has the great Gilgamesh, who's essentially Hercules, come and cuts it down and kills the snake and Lilith runs into the wilderness. And that story is just so very similar to this the other one that was created about her. It was Adam's first wife. I mean, when shit gets real, Lilith runs away. She runs off into the wilderness. So, yeah. That's a very, very shortened version of something that we could talk about all night.
Well, certainly, and those who join your tradition, those who learn more deeply through your tradition, do spend a lot more time discussing and learning the hundreds and thousands of possible nuances in all of that. And how it is a deeply rooted, aspect of our imaginative engineering, our ontological programming of where we're at. And now that we're seeing it, I'm a big believer that we are, I think Neil Gaiman, the American Gods, did a great job of what I always believed is the way the God worked. How 100%.
And I haven't read the book, but I have loved the show that's come out on American Gods, and the character that is Bilquis is essentially Lilith, because Bilquis was the Queen of Sheba, and Lilith was considered the Queen of Sheba. And I will say that mm-hmm. character and that the way that she's represented, I think, is probably one of the truest versions of how I see Lilith, very sexual and sensual and not really on a side. She's on her own side. She travels in between the worlds and the realms, the heavens, the hells, all of those different things. And I love that about her. I don't love the myths of her being like the wife of Satan and all of these other ones, because, you know, at that point, you know, Lilith ultimately was demonized. She was demonized, and she survived for the last 5,000 years continuously, while other deities got, you know, they fell. They disappeared. Some of them we don't even know about anymore. Some have been resurrected a little here and there.
Well,
and even like in the show, we have the new gods that we are worshiping that might not have names right now, of media and like social media and all that crazy stuff. But
well, absolutely. Go ahead.
What's up?
Please.
No, go on.
No, go ahead. I was going to say.
You go.
No, you go. You're my guest. They hear me all the time.
Okay, so all I was going to say was that, you know, a lot of times, you know, Lilith is glamorized in that kind of more negative role, queen of hell, all of that good stuff. And I just feel as though, like, I don't want to glorify or glamorize the demonization of something. So I really work with her more in that more ancient primal state. But I mm-hmm. do think that there is something to be said for the myths that were created about her, because, you know, myths grow as evolution grows and her story continues to unfold. So there's definitely power in those mythologies as well.
Absolutely.
Something that truly resonates with me.
So I've noticed something in your story that I never realized until you said it. It might be interesting in today's sort of, as everybody knows, I believe that we are at war. And as everybody knows, I think that we've been at war for a little time. Hmm?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cosmic war. We're in a war of belief.
Mm-hmm.
We're really in a war. Reality is getting soft around the edges for people, and people are starting to really notice it. And what I mean by that mm-hmm. is what we think we believe is getting deteriorated on a daily basis. They're saying, well, yeah, you thought an atom was the most indivisible item in the world. You were taught that in the mm-hmm. 50s and the 60s, but that's not even radically even true anymore. We're talking down to, as I was talking today, I was talking to somebody about the taste of quarks and the mm-hmm. essence of casting a spell. Mm-hmm. So our scientific reality continues to expand. The size of the universe mm-hmm. since I was a kid has grown several billion light years in size. When I was mm-hmm. a kid, I was taught that we thought the entire universe was 7 billion light years wide. And how awesome was that? Not even close to being the truth. Hmm?
Mm-hmm.
And I think
yeah.
Right? Yeah, you know, so mm-hmm. keep going this. And one of the things I was grown up with, and I'm, you know, actually to be known as Ed the Pagan, is the idea that we have a psychological, a sort of thing, world that the social media just turned it into a factory for our minds, is the idea that we generate memes. And no matter what has happened, Lilith, Eris, these powerful, iconic women have stayed in the background and have not been lost, even though tons of male gods have been lost over the years. There's lots of male gods that will mm-hmm. probably never see the light of day. Because the only 7 statues built to them are deteriorated in the middle of the desert because the other gods didn't like them so much.
Yeah.
But it's not true of Isis of 10,000 names. It's not true mm-hmm. of Eris. It's not true, especially of Lilith. And every...
Yeah, but the really interesting thing... Sorry, go on.
No, go ahead. You're my guest. You're supposed to interact with me.
What I think is really, really fascinating is that Lilith survived by being the adversary. You know, she, it's like, you know, even if we look at like American Gods, for example, again, I love that example where it's just kind of like, you know, if we, deities, they need our thought, they need our worship in a way, but just they need to be thought of and acknowledged in order to survive. So Lilith was just kind of like, fine, okay, whatever, you're going to hate on me, then hate me. You can call me a demon, you can call me all these things, it's not going to change underneath what my character is, what I am to be representative of. Thoughts and ideas surrounding her have changed. You know, she was a demon to a lot of people because culture was so against what she represented years ago. Now people are starting to wake it up to her. We're seeing the equality. We're seeing civil rights movements. We're seeing the sexual revolution. We're seeing sexuality for pleasure rather than procreation. You know, we worship what I call flirtility now more than we worship fertility, sexual gratification, and that's all Lilith.
Whoa, okay.
It's also
stop. My audience is not going to accept the fact that I let it go. Back up.
Okay.
What'd you say
about
flirtity?
What? I said a lot of stuff.
No, flirt. Say that again. Less of flirt. Yes. Yeah.
So I was talking about, you know, how just if you look at some of even the movements that have been happening in the last 100 years, civil rights movement, sexual revolution, all these different things, Lilith is an underlying current to it. As we start to bring in equality and we start to look at, you know, sexuality from a, more of a pleasurable standpoint rather than procreation.
No, it's the fertility culture. That was it. I got it.
The fertility culture. Yeah, so I make a joke in my book.
Okay, go ahead.
I make a joke in the book that, like, we're in, we as a culture now worship flirtility, touchscreen gratification, rather than, you know, how sexuality was worshipped more in a fertility aspect long time ago. I just kind of a play on words. I think it's interesting because we've shifted, we've changed, we've evolved. And
that's worth buying the book for nothing else. There's no other reason. You've got to buy the book for that. Oh, my gosh. That is such a cool concept. I love that.
So where we buy the book, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble. It's even at Target. You can also go to whichwaymagazine.com and order it from there. Or my website, theglamwitch.com, has links to all of the different places. So, and also check me out on social media. Like, I know that there's still a couple of giveaways that are going to be taken and being distributed at some point. So, if you have Instagram, I'm at the.glam.witch, or Michael Herkus. Find me online. Facebook, all of that good stuff. I want to kind of also break down the book itself and kind of how I structured it. Now, since we're talking about the sexuality stuff, but
absolutely,
you know, it's broken really into four different parts. The first part, of course, it starts with an introduction. Fiona Horn wrote a lovely foreword to introduce the book, so that starts it. Then followed my introduction of how I came into everything and what led me to this place. And then it goes into the first section, which is considered the theory. So breaking down Lilith's history, and then it goes into the practice. So, you know, how to meditate, how to make contact, how to do a ritual for her, dreams, all of that interesting stuff. And then also the laws that I can consider the Lilithian laws. And when I was trying to kind of really look at how I can define the laws of Lilith. I mean, laws are kind of really anti her. You know, she can't be confined. So they have to be so free enough to the point where they're not like having someone be like submissive to something. So my laws, my Lilithian laws are essentially to see it, to own it, to flaunt it, indulge in it, and defend it. And so the whole section, the next section of the book, talks about each one of those. Each one has a chapter because they connect to a specific magical practice as well as an epithet of Lilith. So seeing it, that's what I call vision craft. And that's essentially just your psychic power, being able to pay attention to the signs and synchronicities, because Lilith is a gatekeeper to occult wisdom, and she speaks to us in riddles. So you have to be open-minded to it, know how to pull that language apart and understand what a deity is trying to tell you, because they don't speak to us in our language, you know. And so then we get into owning it. That's the shadow work that I talked about earlier with the astrological aspect of Lilith. And trying to integrate your shadow self into your whole self on a magical platform. And then the glue that holds it all together is the middle piece, flaunting it with glamour magic, creating a presence, a persona, how you want the world to see you, how to attract attention, how to push it away. And that comes with Lilith being associated with mirrors and being associated with vanity, confidence, and also being considered a shapeshifter. Because that's kind of what glamour is. We dress for the different jobs that we have. We all have many, many different roles, and we dress according to that. So dress and aesthetics and how we present ourselves are very, very magical. And something that we all kind of do, but we don't necessarily give it as much magical thought. So then we come into indulging it, and that's, of course, sex magic. And kind of teetering off of the differences between sex magic and magical sex, and really just enjoying the pleasures of life. And that comes from Lilith being this, of course, sexual entity. And then the last little bit of it is the bitchcraft of it all, defending it, magical protection. I would call it magical fight or flight, because I know a lot of times people will align Lilith to more darker work, hexing and all that kind of stuff. But if you really, really look at it, anytime Lilith was faced with some adversarial situation, she left it. She leaves. She just leaves it. So that's an interesting chapter where I kind of split it into two and give the reader the option to choose which avenue do you go down in the face of adversity. Do you fight back, or do you just put yourself into another situation so you don't have to deal with it anymore? So that's kind of my nutshell of the contents of the book. And then I have a last section that goes over different formularies, oils, bath salts, ritual blends, a little weekend witchcraft kind of magical makeover template for self-care, and a lovely little conclusion. So that's the contents of the book right there.
All right. So are we going to see a Glam Witch product line out of that? That sounds really cool.
It's definitely something that I'm thinking about and playing around with. But it's just in the
top. Oh, I think you should absolutely consider it. Let me go ahead and tell you. Absolutely. No, absolutely. You should absolutely consider it. I think your idea is correct. I think you're spot on with where your thinking is. And no, I think you should.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We're starting to sell. Understand, I see in our business, there's three very distinct economic models in our community. So just
mm-hmm.
And if you'll indulge me for a minute, it has real relevance to what you're doing, because you are definitely involved with one of them in a big way. And I think your new point of view and a very strongly adversarial version of our economy as a pagan and a Wiccan. So the first one is no cost, no trades. You're a witch and you're a witch and you're a witch and you do what you do, and it's never about the money, and it's never even about the discussion of money. Version one. And that comes out of very much I'm the tribal witch. That's very much the family and the protector. That's our instinct as a tribal witch. How can we charge our family members mm-hmm. money? How can we possibly deal with 150 people we think are most important to us, our tribe? How can we ever make that possible? That's ridiculous. We're just going to do what we do. You're going to give me what I need, and we're going to just do this thing. And that's an economic mm-hmm. model that sits very strongly in our community today. And it's great to be in their community for 150 people.
Yeah.
It's still the number one model in my community, I would agree. The number two model is, it's okay to sell products and to write books, but you're really not supposed to ask money for your temple, or you're not really supposed to be about the money. And we see this being the primary, I say, any, almost all of the well in office fall into this category. And and the third one, and the group that I'm actually studying right here, right now in Salem, represents the witches who say the mainstream want our services. They've always wanted our service. They want our glamour. They want our magic. They want us. And this is a glamour community here in Salem. And that they are able to say, because the mainstream wants us this way, this is the way we love being, we don't have to hide, we can actually be allowed to, you know, to make money, to have a life, to travel the world. And the witches of Salem travel the world in a way that no one else, but they have now accepted deep into their core glamour magic. When you get here, November 13th, you're going to just, I think you're going to wow them. I really do. I think you were taken to the center of that economic culture. And I think it's the economic culture of the millennial witches. So when I talk about people, some people, when they heard me say, talk to you about, is Glam Witch products? And I go, well, yeah, but isn't there Skinny Girl products? Isn't that how she started? She made a few drinks, wrote a book, and off she goes, and she's a billionaire. Just a few months ago, very strongly, so the pagan community just about lost $8 million to Sephora. Because Sephora, I don't know why they backed off to this day. It doesn't make any sense to me. Putting out a beauty kit for witches. They would have taken $8 million out of our economy. So very much, I'm very much, and everybody knows what camp I'm in, and I've been in for 30 years. So when I talk about products, I mean, this is kind of one of those ideas. You didn't automatically reject it. This is very common to your generation, right? This is the idea, isn't you're just, you're not just a witch. You're this whole person, right?
Totally.
And so I guess I think if you listen to me, but I don't know if you see that in the community. But this is something I've been dealing with a lot, is this idea of the idea of it. And I really do believe. So Hood Witch is another example of a young witch. I want to get an interview with you. If you hear me out there, please give me an interview. I know I'm an old bad, I'm old community. But she has like 500,000, nearly 500,000 followers on Instagram. Doing which beauty shop. So.
Yeah.
No, not only are you in the right place, but again, you've got the right instinct. But let me offer you one more, let me look at one more thing with you. So do you think Lilith would have any value? So the Extinction Rebellion is really formed. I don't know if you know anything about it, but last Halloween, a great deal of many groups, including myself, made a declaration, no more, no moss, we're done. This is a rebellion against, you know, for those who would protect Gaia. And the Extinction Rebellion's been out and everything else. And there's pagans and druids and others are starting to join the group, and they're looking at rituals. Do you think Lilith would have any place? And I guess you said something very interesting, that Adam argued against Eve because Adam was all sand and clean material. Isn't that industrial society?
That makes sense.
And you said, and it's the first time I ever put this thing together the way you said it, is that she was made of the mud and the dirt.
Yep.
Isn't that what God
She was considered made of the sediment. Yeah. And I definitely see a connection between Gaia and Lilith. I talk about it slightly in the book because, you know, Lilith, she's connected to all of the different elements. She's, you know, a wind spirit, so she's connected to the air. She represents passion and you know, transformation. So there's the fire. You know, she's definitely our emotional shadow self. There's water connection there. Earth, she's connected to as well because she's always been seen in earth imagery, so caves and trees and all that good stuff. But, you know, when it comes to, like, natural disasters of the world, the tsunamis, the volcanoes, the earthquakes, you know, I kind of look at that as Lilith's rage at that point. She's shaking it up. That's what she represents. And, you know, if we even look at, you know, that you know, her I won't lie below a man reference to in that old context. You know, I look at that as kind of the earth saying, I'm not going to lie below the steel concrete of this civilization. And you can build it, but you're never going to break me, because at the end of the day, I am Earth, and if I want to purge, I will purge. And there's nothing stronger than that, than the wrecked powers of mankind. So yes, I do see a similarity to Gaia and Lilith. Of course, they mm-hmm. both have two completely different energy types, and it's up to you if you believe, you know, there's one singular goddess and she wears many different faces, or if there's many different versions of goddesses out there. But I think that there is some similarity between them.
There's a lot of rage coming. There's like, I know Sir Elizabeth Carell is like planning a primal scream on Halloween Day. Absolutely. She wants to get women and men to just scream all at once, and then sometime in the morning, like 11, I think it's like 11:30 in the morning, and everybody just scream all at once on Halloween Day.
That'd be fun.
To let people know wouldn't that be fun, isn't it? She's doing that. I know there's a lot of energy out in the resistance movement, and it feels very much like that's a place for Lilith out there. I make a recommendation.
Absolutely.
You do so well on here. I think your next 1,000 books is sold. If you can just break this down into a little bit into your glam into TikTok, believe me, trust me, the audience is there.
Mm-hmm.
Baby witch and witch mama. I think glam witch would go there. Uncle witch, which is Alan, who is another one who's doing psychology and doing book reviews, is doing an amazing job. So the vast majority of witches that are between 20 and 30 and even a little younger are on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
Oh.
Just there.
I know nothing about that, so I will look that up.
Believe me, this is like 300 million views for something called a witch check, which is nothing more than taking your phone and running in 9 seconds of Stevie Nicks tape that they give you, and then you show off
mm-hmm.
what you have on your altar.
Oh, fun.
So the glamorization.
I love my
outfit.
It's beautiful.
Okay, so this is why you're bringing this out to me. So, okay, this I've never said this before because this is the inspiration. TikTok is the space for glam witches. They're all glam witches. I've been calling them consumerist. I've been calling them consumerist witches all week. Okay, We asked them to be. We said, we want you to buy our books, our incense, our crystals, our stones, buy all the things we're selling you. And pagan leadership has been doing that. And then they go, well, you don't know how to do it the right way. You're not doing it my way. No, you told us all to buy your books. We bought all your books. We bought all of your magic. We bought all of it. And so they're not consumerists. They're glamorous. Because they're caught in the glamour of it, just like you were. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Witch tech is exactly what
And it's also a gateway.
Well.
And, you know, I look at it like, you know, it's interesting because I feel like I have, you know, one of the big feedbacks that I get from people that have read the book so far is how open and honest I am on page one that I got interested in witchcraft from television and movies and that avenue, because I feel like it was like something that people just didn't want to say. And I'm not the only one out there that had the same situation. But I feel like it was always kind of a no-no, like, don't say that. Or, you know, don't, like, go down this witchy aesthetic kind of a way. You know, there are fashion brands that kind of glamorize witch right now. That doesn't necessarily mean, and, like, I think that's totally two different things when you have, like, the Instagram witches who are just wearing it because it's showcasing like power to them, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. But
I
also
that.
Like when we talk about the Sephora kit, you know, I know everyone got their like super butt hurt about it. At the end of the day, I'm like, it could have been a gateway for some young little teenage witch like I was once upon a time ago that saw it and was like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. And maybe they actually come up to be a great member of our community at some point. You know, it's not necessarily taken away from the major stores because the major witch stores aren't selling that. And at the end of the day, the frivolous things are going to die out here and there. It's going to have its little moment. But the people that are genuinely interested in it, the real consumers of it, are still going to be going to the authentic places. So I just didn't think – I didn't understand why I got such a big, crazy uproar of
– Because it was a test of denial culture, cancel culture.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of people saw it as a big company and didn't realize how business worked. In fact, that a small company, which was smashed by it, proposed it to them. And then Sephora said, okay, we'll guarantee your order, gave them a big enough order. They went out and had it factored and put together for themselves. And while the company wasn't the best company in the world, it was a pagan company that got smashed. It was women. It was witches. They just did a piss poor job of it. And
I didn't know that part of it.
Most people don't know who got hurt. They think of Sephora as this big, huge company that works efficiently. But it's like Hollywood. Everybody doesn't understand that Hollywood works in little bits and pieces. There are thousands of little patchwork companies that make and do it. And then there's one master company that does all the selling. It just is. You make a movie, there's 50 different companies that make that movie or are contracted to make that movie.
It's not just one singular. Yeah,
right?
It's not just one singular entity doing it. It's millions of little pieces and parts to it.
And Sephora was the same thing. But because we became so anti-capitalist, we're so hateful of that idea of somebody coming stealing from us in the community. So we come into this problem of Sephora being asked. No one asked who made that. And let me tell you, for their own thing, they deserved what they got because it didn't do a good job. Okay? I think the market always dictates. The market didn't want a witch product by a faceless group of people so badly that they fought against it so much. So what they did say is and this is what comes back to why I was mentioning your product, and which I'm starting to realize, you're the forefront leader of your section there. Congratulations. I always loved interviewing these because I wanted to go back 10 years from now when you're like got a couple of books down there and they're getting on the thing and you're talking to Ellen. I can remember. Oh, yeah. Ed said this.
Who knows what the future could bring, but that's not – as long as I'm doing something that's an act of service to the community, and I'm happy for it. So we'll see what the future holds. But I'm a very creative individual, so I have some ideas. And I also love it, too, because, I mean, I go to certain festivals and stuff, and I dress up, and it's like the clothing and stuff that I wear is just out there. But I have a lot of fun with it, and I put a lot of effort into it to come up with my theme and create my glamour. And a lot of people are like, where do you get this, and what do you do? And it's fun because a lot of times it is just like these like hair clips that say witch or other things that – you know, before people were all up in arms about because major fashion brands are having witch and selling that in the stores. Like, oh gosh, no. But see, you could get it and wear it yourself and be proud and showcase your craft in that way. Stop looking up and stop caring about what other people are doing. Focus on yours. Focus on what you are doing.
So this has been amazing.
That's a whole other soapbox for another day.
And we will have it because, you know, this is Chicago Pagan Radio. We have, like I tell everybody, we're going to be talking a lot more. We're going to get our city going a little bit better because we have the most amazing people. And as we know, we've generated so many great ideas that come out of our city by individuals. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you produce. So we have two last questions. I have two last questions of the day.
Okay.
So the next question is, I've listened to this. We told everybody where to get your book. You know, you're fantastic on Facebook. What can you tell to somebody out there? So you're talking basically to your 15-year-old self that's sitting in the classroom somewhere. And the classmate to them, you know, is two or three people next to them. What would you tell them if they were listening to this and they're hearing about this clan? What would you tell them? What should they do to take their next step? Get them to a place where they can be like you.
Fun question. I've not been asked any questions like this. That's a cool one. So I would tell them, you know, just grab anything that you can find. Grab all the material, reading material, and just soak it up like a sponge. There are so many different voices of this community, and, you know, I learned by reading. I read everything. I absorbed everything. And that's how I learned what areas of witchcraft were exciting and interesting for me to go down. So even if it's something that doesn't necessarily resonate with you right away, just go down that road and explore it because that helps you build your craft. But at the same time, realize that there's no, like, enjoy the ride of witchcraft. This isn't something that's instantaneous where poof, you wake up and now all of a sudden you have all this power and all this knowledge. It takes time. It takes time for you to build your practice. And the only way to do that is from the ground up and actually doing it, doing the work, doing the research, being willing to be of service and willing to move forward into that. So if someone is young and they're really, really looking to explore, exploring is great. Check out everything that you can get. And that way you can just kind of decide where to go from there. And then be patient and keep up with it. If it's something that doesn't seem right for you, maybe it's not. There's always another different avenue to go down. So, for example, like when I was growing up, I was struggling a lot with because I've never had a desire to work with the dead. I've never had a desire to work with spirits in that concept. And I felt like a lot of things I was reading was all about you have to do that. And no, I don't, because it doesn't work for me. And that's clearly not what one of my active roles or powers are within this lifetime. So I'm going to focus on the areas and the avenues that actually make sense to me. So that, don't be afraid to do that, because there's no one right, true way to be a witch. There's lots of different ways to be a witch. Make your
that's
way.
A real truth.
That's the only right way.
Yeah, there's a real truism in that. Everything else and everything else. And so, so what is the future like? So where are you going? Where can people see you? How are you going to interact next with our community?
Oh, right. Okay, cool. So I will be, for the Chicago people, I will be kicking off my fall book tour here this Saturday from 1 to 3 at Alchemy Arts. And I will be in New York November 15th. I haven't secured a location yet, but hopefully a store picks me up. But I will be up at Two Chicks Bewitched on November 16th, Saturday. And I will be in Omen in Salem on November 17th. And it looks like I will be in New Orleans now, the first weekend in December, but still trying to iron that out. And I have a whole idea of a West Coast travel doing appearances that I want to do early next spring-ish, once I have a couple of some vacation time all scheduled away. And otherwise, I'm just trying to get my blog back up and running and contributing articles on Lilith and extra pieces to the book on there. And doing YouTube. I just got on YouTube, so I might be doing some classes to speak to the masses in that capacity. And now I'm working on a new project that I can't really talk about too much yet, but I have a sequel coming up. What was that?
I was just saying, I insist you talk about it. No, I'm just kidding.
So there's a lot. I'm doing what feels right, what feels called for, and what people are asking for. So people want more, apparently. So I'm very happy and blessed to have that opportunity and be able to put it out there for everyone. So
absolutely. I've been actually thinking about it. We should do in Chicago. We should get all the Pagan Witches. We should do a New Year's Eve event. You know, I was really thinking about something along those lines.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, you know, I'm just saying,
that'd
we
be
don't
fun.
Do a lot. So Chicago, people don't understand, you doing anything in Chicago is really important, and go out and support it, because Chicago is tough. People don't know the misery of being in the Chicago Pagan community sometimes. And we're trying to change that, people. We have glamorous people in our community.
Yes.
I'm talking about that. Everybody, keep calling Twyla. It's been... Well, and she's just burning up the field. So talk about somebody in our community that has glamour, who's really done it, is Twyla York. Do you know Twyla at all? She's done a really
good
job.
We've met a couple of times, but I don't actively know her. Yeah.
Well, she's just
great.
Like, modeling. She's pursuing the modeling aspect. Just straight. No, that's fine. She's an earth spiritualist, yes. I heard you, Twyla. So the very last question of the evening for Chicago is that everybody knows that the official food of Chicago is the hot dog. I adore them. What do you take on your hot dog?
Oh, you know what? I like the Chicago way. I like mustard and some celery salt and a pickle. And that's really good.
There you go.
There. And some onions. Yeah.
A spirit after my own soul. There you go. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you being on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Oh, the honor's mine. And we'll follow up with you on this, absolutely, because I expect you to be doing great things. And so one last time, you can buy your book through Amazon or, more importantly, and go directly to the publisher, people. Let's stop being so lazy. These pennies mean a huge difference in this highly automated society, okay? The few pennies at Amazon you save, go to the publisher. Go directly. They'll make them more money. They'll publish more books.
Yes. So that's www.whichwaymagazine.com. Yeah.
Yes. No, that's an absolute truth. I want people to understand that. Every time you use Amazon, instead of going to where there's an equally safe way to go directly to the publisher or the artist of our community, you're costing our community money. And that means fewer books, fewer products, more to the industrialists, less to us. So any chance you get to, go directly to the artist. Remember, the pagan economy works best when we work peer-to-peer, folks. Remember that. So the best way you can get Michael's great book, The Glam Witch, who talks about this incredible trip into Lilith's story, which I think everybody should read. And anyone who knows my thesis lately, I have to go ahead and read it myself. And
do, you do. You really do. And then we'll do a follow-up, and we'll explore more.
Absolutely. And so go ahead and get it. So absolutely. And this is an idea and a concept that you should take a look at. I'm so honored to have you here tonight. And from here, we say good night and blessed be.
Thank you. Have a great night. Blessed be.
And everybody go ahead. And, you know, next show series we're going to be doing the occult bookstore. It's now becoming the occult society, one of the oldest in the country, I believe. The absolute oldest. We're going to take a look at that material, and we're going to be doing interviews with them in upcoming and amazing shows. I really appreciate it. And we keep finding all this really magnificent talents out there. So, folks, keep following, keep talking, and keep it going. And if you want to find me, you know where I'm at. I'm Ed the Pagan. Night, folks.